As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
The only way to score is, of course, to play with a hand break off.
Hello, I'm Ian Stone. This is Handbreak Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. We're recording this morning after the 2-2 draw away at, I'll call them Sporting Lisbon for the moment, but we'll get to that in a second. We'll be talking about that game as well as looking forward to a huge game on Sunday away at Fulham before the return at the Emirates next Thursday. I'm joined by James McNicholas and Adrian Clark. Morning.
Hello.
Morning.
Hello, hello. I did mention there, Sporting Lisbon, they put out a press release this week, stating their name is categorically not Sporting Lisbon. And they gave three options to call the club differently. I mean, I think it's leaving it a bit open-ended. But there were three options. That is either Sporting Club de Portugal. I imagine that said in slightly more of a Sporting Club de Portugal type accent. Sporting CP or SCP. Anyway, we have been told. So in the same vein, is there a name that people call you that you really don't like and you like to get off your chest? Or a name that you get called that you do like, James?
Well, I don't really have nicknames anymore because James is a single syllable name, you know, that you can't really shorten it much more than that.
The Jamester?
The Jamester, yeah.
Jamie Rooney?
J-Train. But people do occasionally shout Gunner Blog at me in the street.
Of course.
I'm not going to put out a press release about it, but it is always a bit odd.
I think people shouting anything at you in the street is a little bit odd.
Gunner Blog. Gunner Blog, the shout and point, and that's the end of the interaction, to be honest.
Yeah, because you want to go, yes. And...
No, that's it. It ends there.
Yeah,
they don't want to tell me their name. They don't want to tell me how they are. They just want to point and shout. And that's fine.
Adrian, I mean, I guess you get Clarky quite a bit, but is there anything you don't like?
Yeah, it's kind of weird when people call me Adrian, to be honest. Pretty much everyone I know has always called me Clarky. I didn't like the Rev nickname, but we've kind of gone down that route before where writing nicknamed me the Reverend. And as a young 20-year-old that wanted to be cool, but knew he kind of wasn't. It wasn't the ideal nickname. I was forever
very
protesting.
Funny,
I was like, no, I'm really rebellious, honest. I'm a lad. I'm not this Reverend.
Yeah, yeah.
But probably the one description of me that stands out these days, because normally it's like former Arsenal midfielder, former Arsenal winger, tactics analyst, whatever. But when they chuck in former Carlisle and Rotherham winger, it grates on me badly because I was so rubbish for them. And it just instantly makes you think, oh, please don't remember me. If there are any Carlisle or Rotherham fans out there, yeah, please don't remind me of how badly those loan spells went.
James, I mean, as someone who didn't play football professionally, I would kill to be known as the former Carlisle and Rotherham winger.
I know, right?
You?
I'd want that on my gravestone if it were me. But what about you, Ian? I imagine people call you all sorts of things.
Yes, you'd imagine correctly. I get called all sorts of things. I mean, to be honest, not anymore. I'm Stoney. Everyone calls me Stoney, in fact. And I like that. And that's the nickname you get. Although I did get called, I was in a writing room, a comedy writing room the other day, and I got called the governor. And to be honest, I was pleased with that. I was. Although it does, mainly it's older Cockney men who get called the governor. I think you get to a certain, you know, Ray Winston type age and you are the governor. But it was meant with affection and with a certain amount of respect. I'd like to think almost awed respect. And I was very happy with it. But yeah, that I Stoney is what I get called now. And again, I'm not sending out a press release. If I want something else, I'll just mention it to people.
I was doing the show last night, The Breakdown Live, and was given these instructions in capital letters on our running order. And Q, honestly, the first time I mentioned it, Sporting Lisbon just came out. So it's always the way, isn't it?
Do we know why, by the way, they want to change their name? Do we have any?
I think
any
it's
idea?
Like calling us Arsenal London. They're just like, that's not what we called.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Well, now we know, but consider us told. SCP.
We take the 2-2 now back to London and try to finish the game there.
We got a slightly fortuitous away draw. SCP 2, Arsenal 2. Now we started, it just sounds weird, didn't it? But anyway, really a fortuitous draw, but it gives us a decent chance of getting through at the quarterfinals, assuming we don't pick up any further knocks. The starting lineup, Adrian. Turner, White, Saliba, Kivior, Zinchenko, Vieira, Jorginho, Xhaka, Saka, Martinelli and Nelson. Six changes in the Bournemouth game. I think this tells us all we need to know about our priorities at this point of the season.
Yeah, look, Mikel Arteta's priorities are in line probably with the supporters, aren't they? It's the title is the one. That's where we need to be putting our best 11 out in. For us this year, the Europa League is different. Before, it became the priority because we were struggling so much to get into the top four. It became the be-all and end-all, and there's a lot of pressure on us to win it and to get into the Champions League. This time around, we genuinely can have some fun with it and see where it takes us. Let's try to get through, but not at the expense of burning out all of our star players. So I think the balance of the team was about right. I said that ahead of kickoff last night. I said it's a kind of level of rotation that I would have gone for. I don't think we could have gone much further given how light we are up top at the moment in forward areas. So yeah, no arguments with the team selection, but what you get is clearly a dip in the fluidity of the performance. You know, we don't move the ball as sharply and we're not quite as solid without the ball, and I think those elements were definitely on show in the game.
Yeah. I mean, also, by the way, the substitutes bench, James, Ramsdale, Partey, Gabriel, Smith Rowe, Holding and Tomiyasu, but also names that you may not be familiar with, Bandera, Hilson, Sago Jr., Smith and Walters. And as Adrian said, not a lot of attacking depth on there.
No. I'm glad you didn't ask me for an in-depth biography of all those players. I was thinking I'm in big trouble here. But I think that bench was used quite effectively, to be honest. You know, the game threatened to become really chaotic and end-to-end. And in that last 20 minutes or so, Arteta put Thomas Partey on the pitch, put Gabriel on the pitch. Tomiyasu, I thought, came on and actually did really well. Good performance for him bouncing back after the weekend. Yeah. And I thought that Arsenal looked a lot more solid in that final period. And it was almost as if Arteta was saying, sort of, enough of this silliness. Let's get out of here with a decent result, which I think an away draw in a two-legged tie is a very decent result. And I think Arsenal should be pretty confident, from what I've seen, and given that they're going to have a couple of suspensions, of going through in this round.
Yeah, quite. I mean, I'll tell you what, before we get into any further analysis, Art de Roche was in Lisbon at the game, and he sent us this voice note.
Hi, guys. Art here at the Lisbon airport, where I had to pack all my coats and hoodies into one carrier bag because basically I left when it was snowing, and then it was sunny all day. But yeah, here's kind of my thoughts on the game last night, which was very strange. It just felt like Arsenal were just a bit too hesitant in certain moments, which has been a theme of the past few weeks, I feel, where, again, both goals, there's just some split-second decisions that aren't made that gave Sporting the advantage in certain moments and situations. And yeah, looking at a game from, I guess, the press box, you just kind of were hoping those things don't creep up again in the Premier League. Obviously, there were 6 changes, I believe. So that has to be taken into consideration. But yeah, you just hope it doesn't kind of slide and that they're able to kind of just get back into their own rhythm, because Mikel Arteta did also say after the game that they've played a lot of emotional games, and even though last night's was quite strange, there was that 10 minutes of madness, really. So you want to kind of get back to the point where Arsenal are in a bit more control of games, and hopefully that can come against Fulham. But yeah, I guess we'll see where we go from last night, really.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we've all made the mistake with the clothing, haven't we? I mean, I went up to Manchester. I did it the other way around. I went up to Manchester. Beautiful sunny day when I left London. This is years ago. And by the time I got up there, it was snowing. And I was wearing a T-shirt. And even as a young person, it was a bit much, to be honest. That hesitancy, Adrian, that's what you were talking about, really. Those changes... It just means we're not playing the sort of liquid football, the telepathic stuff, because players are not in quite the right places. It's only 5 or 10 yards out, but that's all it takes.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, and players take the extra touch maybe where they don't need to. Sporting, to their credit, did I get that right? I think so. Yeah, Sporting de Club.
Yeah, it's all right.
They pressed us quite well, and they caused us 1 or 2 issues. They gave everything. They put everything into the game.
Well, it's a huge game for them, isn't it?
Exactly.
They're playing the Arsenal, and Arsenal London, as we now want to call them. And no, but they are. It's a bigger game for them than it is for us.
Yeah, and some of our choices weren't great. We lost the ball in bad areas for sure, and the midfield. So, I mean, every time Thomas Partey is missing, you do notice it. I know that Jorginho came in and did a terrific job for 2 or 3 games. But in this game, because it became frantic, because it became stretched and end-to-end, that really is where you see the difference between Jorginho and Partey from an athletic point of view. When the match is congested, when all of the players are within 30, 40 yards of one another, Jorginho's dynamite, and he's there, he's ratting around, he's doing everything. When it gets pulled apart, when you see a lot of open spaces, that's where his lack of pace comes into play. And we did see that a couple of times where players run off him, and they carried that threat on the counter, and that will be the same at Emirates Stadium in the return leg. So I don't think the tie's done and dusted. I think they will. I mean, they won 4-0 in the qualifying round away from home, having drawn 1 apiece with Midtjylland in that tie. So they're a decent away outfit, and I think they're capable of scoring in that away leg, in our leg at home. So got to be careful.
It's tall order winning away at Midtjylland.
I mean, if ever there's a team that wants to be called something different, surely it's Midtjylland, not Sporting Lisbon.
Apparently they're fine with it. Apparently they are fine with it, but we might be hearing differently shortly. James, I did see a tweet you did yesterday when you talked about, because somebody had tweeted the fact that Thomas Partey had been called up for the international break by Ghana, and you said it's a no from me.
Yeah.
I mean, he makes such a difference. Every time he comes on, he slows the game down, doesn't he? If we're out of... Well, does he slow the game down? It just seems to be he's more in control of the game than any of our other central midfielders, good as they are.
I think that's fair, and, you know, a great example of that was recently... Was it the Everton game where he came on at half time? And, you know, the game state changed. Arsenal had got 2 goals in that first half, and that obviously affects how things play out on the pitch. But the degree of control that he was able to exert in central midfield, I thought his role in the comeback against Bournemouth as well was pretty significant. I think if he had a couple of defensive lapses maybe that helped them get their goals, he was pretty instrumental in the way Arsenal came back into the game. He is a really important player for the team at this point in time. And I agree with Adrian that while Jorginho, I think, has shown his qualities, when the game becomes stretched when it's played over bigger spaces.
Yes.
Partey inevitably is better in those situations. And that last 20 minutes, I thought, was really indicative of that against Sporting.
A couple of, Zinchenko was quite heavily involved in quite a lot of the big moments. I mean, there was quite a funny moment watching him arguing with Sebastian Coates. It's hard for me not to say Coates. It's written as Coates, but I know there's an accent on the E, so it's Coates. And Coates was towering over him, but Zinchenko is up for the fight. His pass, his poor pass out to Reece Nelson, I thought it was a poor pass that led to the shot, the corner, and then the goal. He plays quite high risk passes, doesn't he, Adrian? And we're gonna get caught out. But I didn't think that was a particularly difficult one, and he just overhit it.
It comes with the territory of being brave. If you want your players to be brave on the ball, you want them to take chances. When they occasionally mess up, you can't bury them, can you, for it? I mean, there are so many risky passes that he plays between players that come off, that turn defence into attack in the blink of an eye. I think the positives massively outweigh the negatives with Zinchenko. Although I totally agree with James, or can I call him Gunnerblog today? I agree with Gunnerblog when his assessment of Tomiyasu as that sort of inverted left back or someone that comes on basically to shut down danger down the right hand side. I thought he did a really, really good job at it. And off the back of being.
Looked going forward as well.
Yeah, he did.
Looked good going forward.
He looked
all
right, didn't he? On the back of getting hooked at half time in the previous game, where despite the euphoria of the win, he would have personally felt, I've let myself down there. You know, his confidence could have dipped. I love the fact that Mikel doesn't hold that against him. He's like, no, get back out there, son. You know, I believe in you. I need you to do this for us tonight. And he did the job that was asked of him superbly, in my opinion.
Yeah. Letting in goals from set pieces. James, it is happening a fair bit. I mean, I don't know quite what Kivior was doing at the corner, but free header from 5 yards out. Obviously, the goalkeeper maybe takes some blame for that. But is it a worry? Is it a worry going forward?
I think it definitely is. And Mikel Arteta was quite clear about that in his post-match press conference. He said, you know, we need to cut this out if we're going to keep winning games. Obviously, it's different personnel last night, but it is a concern. And I thought it was a strange one, the corner that we did concede. If you watch it back and you sort of play it quite slowly, it appears there is a shout from somewhere. But who it is, I don't know. Because it almost looks like a miscommunication between Turner and Kivior. Kivior really ducks out of the challenge, which is very unusual for a centre-half. So I think we've got to give him the benefit of the doubt, really, on his Arsenal debut and assume that he heard something that made him think that was the right call. I don't know. What did you make of it, Adrian?
Yeah, it was. Do you know what? I think something that's probably been overlooked when people have been discussing this goal is why is there a free runner? And the runner is free because they've run off Martinelli. And Martinelli normally doesn't occupy one of the man marking spots. Those three guys in front of the zonal guys in the 6 yard box, they're there to mark. Okay. And he was asked to do that role because he's playing striker and he's not used to it. And he let the guy run off him. So that is problem number one. And then it did look like there was a slight miscommunication between Turner and Kivior. He wouldn't duck unless he hears a shout. And if there's a shout, Turner's got to come. But in the same breath, I don't want to be too harsh on Turner because that was a great ball in. It was
a really good
trajectory at pace. I'm not convinced if he went for it that he would have got there. He couldn't have caught it. There's no way he could have caught it. It was too low. So he would have had to literally punch someone's head off if he didn't get the ball. So I would pin it more on Martinelli personally than the two that are getting the blame for it. But three minor mistakes add up to one big mistake, and that's why we conceded. It is a worry. Too many times it's happening of late where opponents are coming up with routines that get players free from corners. So we've got to work on it, and I'm sure that they will work on it. And it's a major concern ahead of Fulham away because of Mitrovic and you know the threat he carries in the air. So yeah, I'm a bit nervous about corners whenever the opposition get one at the moment.
I think that's a good point about Mitrovic, and they've got players who can deliver a good set piece as well. Our old friend Willian is among them. But I wonder as well, is this a consequence of what happens when you are a team that dominate open play to the extent that Arsenal do? I think it's inevitable that opponents are going to say, well, where can we make the gains? Where can we have the advantage?
Yeah.
And I think the likes of Bournemouth, Everton, Sporting have clearly planned for that and executed it really well. And I think it's, in a funny way, it's a compliment because it's them saying, well, this is probably one of our best scoring chances in the game. But it's something Arsenal have to be wise to and have to work on. And it is curious only because prior to the World Cup, we had such a good defensive record at set pieces.
Yeah, I've had enough of compliments, if that's the way it works, to be honest with you. I'm happy for you to not think that much of us. Martinelli, great run.
What a goal that would have been.
What a goal that would have been. That would have been from further back. He was only just outside the 18-yard box when he set off.
I don't know whether you did this, but when I was in the studio with Nick Bright, I went, Chelsea! He's going to do a Chelsea.
It did feel like that. It did have a little bit of the Chelsea about it. Didn't score, but he's looking dangerous again. Scoring goals and he did miss a couple of chances last night, but strikers do. One thing they said before we move on from the game, they were talking about a breathless encounter. It was a little bit breathless until Thomas Partey came on and calmed things down. While we're on the subject of breathlessness, I haven't spoken to either of you since the ridiculous game at Bournemouth. James, you apparently died at the game. I was very sorry for our loss after the game, and I saw your little message on Twitter. The FA are going to, I don't know, investigate us after the celebrations against. But what's to investigate? We won 3-2 with three goals in the last half an hour. Investigate away. I think you might have found the cause of those celebrations, to be honest with you. Adrian, you sent us a message after the game. Now we got you here. We don't want to win like that every time, right? We really, really don't. But as a player in that situation, I mean, the fans went crazy. The players went crazy as well. Is it? I mean, obviously, it's a positive thing, but really, we'd rather be winning 2-0 and comfortably keeping teams out, right?
Yeah, and hopefully that's going to be around the corner with the games that are coming up. It can't be like that all of the time. I did read a stat that no title winners have ever scored more than three 90th minute winners in a campaign.
And we're at three aren't we?
So, yes. So we've sort of used up our criteria, you know, our quota is the word. We've used up our quota of dramatic injury time winners maybe. But yeah, I think overall it's got to be seen as a positive that we
keep battling back, keep don't they?
I mean, that's why when I did the breakdown of the game, I kept going back to what I loved most about the performance, and that was the desire to win. At 2-0 down, they just wanted to win the game, and they believed they could win the game, and they kept going until they did win the game. It was wave after wave after wave of attacks. It was phenomenal. And on the celebrations, just very briefly, it was the greatest advert for the Premier League, that moment. You know, the images, the still images, the video images. It's what following football, playing football, being a coach is all about, those moments, those special moments. If we end up getting punished for that, and I know you have to have rules about certain people can't enter the field of play, but if we get punished for that, it's just madness, really, because that was the perfect advert for the Premier League and for football as a sport. Nothing, I can't think of anything really that can make 60,000 people go bonkers in a moment of ecstasy at the same time in such an unexpected way. It's glorious. It's to be celebrated.
And millions around the world. Absolutely. We talked about this on the pod. All those videos from people around the world, people in Cambodia jumping in pools.
Oh, no,
in Africa,
they should be punished.
Their trousers falling down. James, I mean, you wrote the piece about emotion, and we talked about it quite extensively on the pod. There is nothing else that can really send you that way, like football. But is it too much too soon? I mean, this is a question I wanted to ask. I know Gary Neville's been going on on one of the on TV about how it's too much. We're getting too excited too soon. Do you think that's true? Or in the end, listen, we came back from 2-0 down. It is what it is.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. Arteta actually, as Art said, mentioned after the game last night, Arsenal have played a lot of emotional games recently. Gary Neville, I heard him say that when the celebrations at Aston Villa, I think he described them as a bit too desperate. But I don't know if you can be too desperate to win a Premier League. And Arsenal are desperate. It's been 20 years, the best part of, since they won a title. And I don't think you can underestimate what this means to this group of players. And it's just that double-edged sword, isn't it? I think that's a huge part of what's fueling them, what's driving them on, which is pushing them to do it, to get over that line. But I don't doubt that there is a kind of emotional and psychological toll to that. And I can't say how it ends, unfortunately. I've got no idea. It's sort of...
Can't you? We were hoping. We were hoping you would come on today and tell us how it all ends.
I know. Sorry, guys. No spoilers.
Gary Neville to tell us how we should or shouldn't feel anyway.
I mean, who's anyone to tell us how we should or
you
shouldn't
feel?
Feel
what you feel, don't you? And that's, you know, I mean, I feel sorry for supporters, really, in a way that win a league or win a huge game and just feel the emotion of standing up and clapping. You know, it's because it's so normal to them. It takes away that, you know, those moments of euphoria. It's, I don't know.
I think it's interesting as well because we're up against a team in Man City and a fan base in Man City, which, I mean, they won't appreciate me saying this, but maybe a little bit sort of spoiled by success. You know, there's a kind of ennui about their multiple title victories and, you know, their lack of engagement with the Champions League and things like that. I do think it's a really stark counterpoint to what's happening at Arsenal. And I think...
Yes.
It's logical, maybe, for some pundits to look at that and think, well, you know, that's because winning is part of their behaviour and something they'll automatically do. But I don't know, you know, it doesn't always play out like that. And I don't think you could take the emotion out of this for Arsenal and them still be in the hunt, if you see what I mean. I think it's as think much
emotion,
a help as a hindrance.
Yeah, the emotion is what's fueling them, really. That togetherness between the fans and the coaching staff and the team, it feels like a very together club, and that emotion is what is carrying us forward. I mean, you don't get last-minute winners without help from the crowd. I mean, the crowd at Aston Villa were getting right behind them, and we were pushing and pushing. I love the fight in this team. And by the way, we came back from 2-1 down last night as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, we want some ice cool victories. We want some really professional 3-point hauls where there's no drama. Of course we do. And I'm sure there will be a few of them. But yeah, if the match is dramatic, it's going to make you emotional. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Look, in the same breath, I wouldn't hammer Manchester United for the way that they celebrated winning the Carabao Cup, because they hadn't won
absolutely.
A trophy for ages, and they got every right to dance around and be joyous, even if some people will look at them and think, oh, it's only the League Cup, mate, calm down. Like, I just think it meant a lot to them, and I understand it, and for that reason, go wild, it's fine.
Yeah, and listen, the celebration police, I mean, I don't know, they should probably get regular seats now at the Arsenal. They're going to, because they'll be watching us celebrate wildly, hopefully, every game. One place they won't need to go, of course, is Tottenham. Oh, no, the celebration police. We don't need that seat. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine. By the way, how long ago was it? It's about 8-9 months ago that Tottenham pipped us for fourth place. It seems like a lifetime. Doesn't it really? Quite the turnaround, and long may that continue. This is Handbreak Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We were a bit with the handbrake at time.
Ian Stone, James McNicholas and Adrian Clarke in full Arsenal gear, by the way. I have to say, I haven't mentioned.
I did it for Abby because she spotted this hoodie that I was wearing on something else I did. And she said, I hope you'll be wearing that for the podcast. So, you know.
Beautiful looking thing. It's what year is that, by the way?
This is club merch. Current. You can get this currently. It's got the old school Adidas there. It's my red hoodie with a cannon. Yeah, you can get this in the club shop.
It's really nice.
They sort of want me to wear this kind of clobber for the shows. But why not wear it in everyday life every now and again?
It's a good look. If you're listening to this, I am, which people generally do, I'm sorry that you can't see it. Maybe we'll post a picture.
I've also got the bobble hat. I got a bobble hat on because I just did the school run and it was snowy.
Because he couldn't get his hair done.
Didn't do my hair. So
listener. James, I'm not going to. Anyway, Fulham v Arsenal. Fulham v Arsenal on Sunday. This was one of those games, wasn't it? Again, we went behind in the game at the Emirates. And this wasn't this the game, James? And you can remind me it was almost the first time when the crowd went, don't worry about it. Was this William Saliba's own goal? I can't remember. It might have been another game.
No, it was Mitrovic, I think, scored for Fulham.
But it was a mistake, wasn't it, by Gabriel?
Yes, perhaps. He gave the ball
maybe
away.
It was that one. Yeah. Gave the ball away. Mitrovic scored, and the crowd went, "Don't worry about it. It's okay. It's okay. We'll be fine." And we came back to win 2-1. But this was a tough, tough game. And they are doing very well at this year, Fulham.
They are. They are. They're really exceeding expectations. I think they've got a very able coach who, you know, will have been watching Arsenal in recent weeks and looked to exploit any vulnerability there. And I think Mitrovic is just such a handful, as Adrian mentioned. You know, he is a real physical force, powerful, dominant in the air. I think having Gabriel back in the side is going to be really important because, you know, when he gets drawn into those duels, more often than not, he comes out on top. And Saliba's got the cool head. I think that battle between our centre-halves and their centre-forward is going to be a pretty pivotal one on the day.
Yeah. Adrian, you're nodding along. James mentioned our old friend Willian. He's playing really, really well for them. He basically looks like the player that we'd have hoped that we'd have bought, but it didn't turn out that way. But he's looking dangerous for them. They've got some danger. Also, Maynor Solomon, this Israeli forward who keeps coming on and scoring from the bench. He's got, I don't know, 4-4 or something like that. They're a decent team, aren't they?
They're a very, very decent team. No one would have predicted they'd be where they are in the division. They've been excellent.
West London club.
I think Brentford are above them at the moment. But
oh, are they?
Yeah,
right.
But they're having a cracking campaign, and they've had an attacking mindset, and that's been really, really positive. Manuel Solomon has got an 80% conversion rate. He's scored with all but one of his shots so far, 4 out of 5. So don't let him shoot, I think, is the message. And do you know what? In regards to Willian or the fullbacks, Kenny Tete or Anthony Robinson, stop the crosses. If ever there was a game to work extra hard to stop crosses, it is this one. And because Mitrovic is very, very clever in the positions he takes up on the sort of blind side of centre-halves, and he gets a run on them. And once he gets a run on a centre-half, doesn't matter if it's Gabriel and Saliba or even the two of them together, he's good enough to get on the end of crosses. So, yeah, that's the fear. The boost is João Palhinha being suspended. Terrific player. They just don't have anyone. It's a bit like us losing Partey, really. They don't have anyone to cover him, really. So I would expect us to control central midfield. And look, hopefully we can get some, you know, strikers out on the pitch. I mean, that's the other concern, isn't it? In terms of who's going to be fit enough to feature in the game.
Yes.
I doubt Trossard will, if that's a muscle injury. I don't know what Eddie Nketiah's problem is.
Ankle. Yeah. It's an ankle problem.
Yeah. So, yeah.
We don't know.
It depends. Yeah. Whether he could be strapped up or not. But we do look a little bit light up top. So, it'd be nice to get one of those guys and maybe even Gabriel Jesus, some kind of involvement.
Yeah. At the time of recording, by the way, Fulham are ahead. Just to let you know, I've been informed by Abby, our producer. They are ahead. I think Brentford do have games in hand. Listen, we know it's a tough game against them. I mean, in the end, is this when the season starts now, James, do you think? And what I mean by that is, now that we've got Europa League as well, you know, Thursday, Sunday, and this is when we find out how good the squad is.
I think it's a different challenge, for sure. 12 games to go now for Arsenal in the Premier League. And I do think that, you know, we've had weeks where we've played twice, but that thing of going abroad and coming back, it is a different task. And the squad is stretched in some areas, particularly up top. And I thought you could see against Sporting in the final moments. I thought Ben White looked really fatigued to me, struggling to get back. Bukayo Saka played 90 minutes. Gabriel Martinelli played 90 minutes. None of that's ideal, really. So I think we need someone back in forward areas sooner rather than later. I mean, the one that's fascinating is Jesus. You know, how soon can they get him back on a pitch? There was some talk that he might make the trip to Portugal. He's obviously been involved in team training this week, stepping up his recovery. Could he be in the squad even for Sunday? What sort of lift would that give the fans, but also the players? I mean, he's just such a pivotal figure in the first half of the season. I almost think that, I mentioned this on Twitter yesterday, but I really think Arsenal deserve more credit than they've received for how they've coped without him. In that, you know, they had 14 games with him, and Sunday will be their 13th without, if he doesn't play. And they've maintained, across that period, their lead at the top of the table. They've used Nketiah, they've used Trossard, they've used Martinelli. We saw Fabio Vieira do about 15 minutes up top last night. They have managed that situation so well. And I think we've been so fixated on the title and game by game, week by week. Probably some of us have forgotten quite how transformative and how good Jesus was in that first half of the season. If he can come back, and it is a considerable if, because this is a significant injury, at anything like his best level, it will be a huge, huge lift for the team.
Yeah. I mean, James, Adrian, I mean, you just nodding along there, really. Right, has, I mean, he's been an absolutely fantastic addition to the team, to the club. And it feels like the lessons that he brought along have been learnt by the other forwards to a certain extent. The way that they play, the way that we play, is partly down to the way that he plays. And he can't come back quick enough, can he, really?
Yeah, our DNA of centre forward is Gabriel Jesus now. So everyone's trying to mimic him. This is probably why Trossard came in for Eddie Nketiah for the games that he did, because it brought out the best in Martinelli. And then it may be distracted from Saka on the other side, where, you know, teams don't, can't focus just on him. He is hugely important. I would echo what James says. And I cannot wait to see him back. That video of him skipping around in the training, going to tackle players, was brilliant, wasn't it? Holding back. So that tells me he must be close. And I think, it'd be glorious to see him potentially on the bench for the Fulham game, or if not that, the Sporting game. Yeah, he would give us a lift at just the right time, especially with Nketiah and Trossard struggling with injury.
One other person who's come back to the club, Cesc Fabregas, it looks like he's going to come back to coach the under-18s. This whole through line, James, that we have with players like Per Mertesacker, like Jack Wilshere, like Cesc, who used to play for the club, obviously like our manager at present and like our sporting director as well. People who know the club, who get what Arsenal is about. This stuff is all to the positive, isn't it? And Cesc, I mean, can you imagine being a kid and learning from Cesc Fabregas?
Yeah, fantastic. Right through to the post-match analysis that Adrian provides. Arsenal DNA all the way through the club. But I am happy to see Cesc back.
I'm so sorry, Adrian. I really apologise for missing out there.
I am happy to see Cesc back. It's so interesting. He did a big interview with BBC, I think with Chris Kamara, and yes. He was talking about his departure from Arsenal and coming back. And he's still a divisive figure, Cesc. You know, you still see a lot of people saying, you know, they're not happy with the way he left or the fact that he went to Chelsea. Personally, I've got very fond memories of his time at Arsenal, and I think he's clearly always had a brilliant football brain. And I think having him back, even in this kind of casual capacity, working at the academy, is a really positive thing.
Quite. Let's have a song before we go. James, what have you got?
Well, based on some of our sort of defensive lapses of late, I've gone for Fix Up, Look Sharp by Dizzy Rascal, because I think Arsenal will need to fix up and look sharp at Craven Cottage on Sunday.
Yeah, I think they will. Adrian, what about you?
Yeah, I found a song. The lyrics are unbelievably apt. It's a song, I don't know where the song comes from. It's by an artist called Jordan Fellis. It's called Jesus Is Coming Back. I'll read you some of the lines. So keep your head up. Jesus is coming back. Jesus is coming back. No, don't you give up. Hey, Jesus is coming back. Jesus is coming back. And when the world gets complicated, we're going to keep on celebrating. Very apt. Because we know, nice. Yeah, we know Jesus is Jesus coming back. Jesus
is coming back.
So there you go.
I mean, big Arsenal fan, apparently, that artist. Huge Arsenal fan. So that's nice to know. And I've gone, because the Europa League, I mean... I'm trying to care, and I did watch the game, but in the end, it's all about the weekend for me now, every weekend. And so I've gone, it's very on brand, I've gone for The Jam, Here Comes the Weekend. We shall see on Sunday. That's it. For the podcast, thanks to James. Thank you to Adrian. Thanks to Abby, our producer. And thank you, listener. And enjoy the game Sunday. This is Handbreak Off, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. See ya.